Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. However, I am still broadcasting live from Pagosa Springs, Colorado. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 3rd, 2011, episode 198. Sponsored today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
Good morning, everybody. Jamie, you're not cleaning stalls this week. Do you miss it? Do you miss the smell of sweet grass, hay, and manure?
You know, I did receive about 8 calls from Jose yesterday just saying random things about the horses on the farm, and 2 of my students went and rode the horses last night, so I'm feeling pretty confident and pretty secure that everything's okay. So I did rest a lot yesterday, did not clean a stall, really didn't get close to a horse at all, and, you know, it's an okay day, really. I actually kind of slept for most of it.
It's what horse people have to do the first day of vacation, because we have to recover from the last year.
That's exactly right. It's catch-up. You're playing catch-up, for sure.
Jennifer and I were just talking yesterday. I said, you know, I'm about due. I'm kind of getting burnt out. I've been working 100 hours a week here the last couple months, and it's like time to get away for a couple days. So I'm going to have to look for some place to go here soon.
Oh, really? So you guys are thinking about taking a vacation, too. Where are you thinking about going?
Well, it's just some place close. You know, we love the cabins around here. We have so many of those cool cabins that you can rent. And we loved Pigeon Forge when we were there down in Gatlinburg. So we might take a look at that, and that's only about 4 hours away, so it's a quick drive. We'd love to go down and see our friend Michelle there in Louisiana, but it's a 12-hour drive, and if you're trying to do that for, you know, for a 4-day trip, you're driving half of it. So,
no, you certainly can't drive for that short of time. Why aren't you thinking bigger, Glenn? Well, I thought what happened in Mackinac Island.
Well, actually, we're still talking to Mackinac Island. Haven't gotten anything nailed down there yet, but I got an email yesterday I have to respond to. So that's a possibility, too. Lots of possibilities out there. And then, of course, in the fall, we have to come out and see a friend of ours somewhere in the West.
Yes, you're going to have to come out to Phoenix, Arizona, but dear God, don't come out there now. Because it is literally 115 degrees yesterday. It's horrible. And it's what they call monsoon season. So with these haboobs and everything, we've also been getting rain. But it's not just like, oh, it's going to rain. It's like, kaboom, it's going to drop a giant cloud right on your head in the middle of the day. We're going to blow everything over at the same time, and then it's going to be gone. So it's really not an exciting time in August in Phoenix, Arizona. I'll tell you that right now. However, November and December.
I was kind of thinking like October. Yeah, November, maybe October, November, December.
Yeah, January, February.
You know, if you get this new place, you're going to have that house, that big house that we saw in the pictures the other day, and we can all come out, and your whole family and Jennifer and I can come out for Christmas.
Well, see, the Glenn, that big place, if you recall, was in the Napa Valley. So you'd have to make different plans. Go a little further west. If I was to get the $6.25 million place, there is also the possibility of the place in Jackson Hole that you showed me that was $125 million. So really, I would like to thank you for giving me such great different farms to go look at and keeping it realistic.
I just try and be real, Jamie.
Making me feel
poor. We have a big, big name coming on the show today that I'm very excited about. Jennifer worked hard to get this interview, so let's let Jennifer tell us about it.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, trainer Jimmy Tatker. Woo! Those of you in the standard bred business will recognize that name because he is a rock star out there with the Pacers and the Trotters, and he's going to be here to tell us all about the goings-on with the megastar standardbred filly, Siouette Peelers, who is setting all sorts of records. I believe she's 21 for 21 now, so that should be interesting to hear about. She probably has paparazzi following her around up in New York. And in today's dramatic reading of Black Beauty, our hero will most assuredly be trotting into some sort of trouble while making his rounds as a London cabbie. And furthermore, Christy from thehorse.com will be here with her regular horse health report because it's Wednesday, and I did check. What will the gross out rating be today? Going to have to stay tuned to find out.
I can leave, right, before today. I don't even know what this is, and it's like I want to leave. It just sounds
bad.
You
do know what this is. You said to me earlier you have no idea what EIA, equine infectious anemia, is. However, did you ever get a horse a Coggins test?
Yes.
So this is actually what the disease is when they have a Coggins test. They're testing for EIA.
I never knew that. See, I always just knew that you needed a Coggins test, but I thought it was for the Coggins disease.
No, that's the guy that designed the test, okay? So, yeah, so you do know a little more about this than you think, but we're all going to learn a little bit more definitely coming up today. Well, I'll go ahead and I'll do my daily whinny. My daily whinny goes out to a large group of women, mothers. Mothers, I don't understand how you can do it. I think I'm sitting here, Glenn, right now, and I'm doing this radio show, and I'm currently not trying to keep four dogs from barking during the show, and that's about the extent of my motherliness. However, being in a house, all one house, again, with five kids, all four and under, I've learned that mothers are just these absolutely phenomenal, amazing people, and that really, you know, you think that EIA is gross, or, you know, whatever you have to do with your horse on a daily basis is gross. However, when the child ran into the bedroom, into the living room last night with a wad of toilet paper in his hand that he had wiped himself with and run out to show his mother how he wiped, that to me is you have to be an amazing, look, mommy, look what I did, I wiped, and I got some. I was like, well, gross. Then the other thing is, you know, it starts to rain out there a little bit. It starts to rain, so sprinkling, and, you know, being from Phoenix, we're like, oh, let's go outside, and then everybody kind of came outside, and then one child decides to strip down naked and pee in the grass. What is going on here? Apparently, you're not born with any sort of boundary. So, mothers everywhere, you guys are amazing to deal with this on a daily basis. So, you get my daily winning.
This is kind of a birth control trip for you, isn't it?
Let me just go ahead and tell you that usually, you know, I take some, you know, my vitamins and my meds after our show, like midday, whatever. I took that sucker at 6 o'clock this morning.
My Daily Winnie's not so funny as yours. It's a little bit terrifying, actually. But, of course, that whole thing is, too. my Daily Winnie ties in to my question of the day for Facebook, Jennifer. I want you to post a video, that link there to the video that I have in the show notes. I came across this yesterday, and I know how you like adventure. You loved zip lining, right?
Yes.
You loved that. You did that. You thought it was fun, right?
I loved it. Loved it. It felt like I was flying.
I have the ultimate zip line adventure for you. This is the ultimate adventure. And I would love to know, later in the day, I would love for you to show this video to your husband, who is a F-16 fighter pilot and, you know, shouldn't have a problem with heights at all. I'd love to see his reaction to this and whether he would do it. So in Toronto, anybody that's been to Canada, up to Toronto, and there where the Niagara Falls is, you will know that there's this very tall tower called the CN Tower. And
like
you go up to the top.
And see, it looks like the Space Needle. And it looks like the Space Needle in Seattle.
That's correct.
I didn't know what this building was either.
And I've been up the CN Tower. So I've been up to the top of that tower, and I've done the walk-in thing and everything inside. And, you know, they have an observation deck like they do at the Space Needle and like they do at the Empire State Building and the Sears Tower. And I've been up all those. So that's all cool. Well, mm-hmm. Jennifer doesn't like them much. She'll go up to the top and stay toward the back wall. She won't get over toward the glass to look out. Well, this one has a new attraction. I guess they got this idea from the one there in Vegas. They decided to put an attraction at the top that I would love to know, and I know you watched the video. I'd love to hear your reaction to this. What they have done is they have put basically a zip line, a pole around the outside. It's round, around the outside of the observation deck. And they have a 5-foot walkway ledge, like this metal grate ledge. And what they do is they strap you into this suit and this harness, and they hook you to this pole that goes around the outside of the Space Needle. So basically, or the CN Tower. So basically what you can do is go to the outside, walk around on this 5-foot ledge right up to the very edge, 116 stories above the ground, by the way, which is 1,168 feet above street level. And you can actually lean over the edge and look straight down. You can turn around. You can't really jump. There's no jumping involved. The cord that's holding you up is short enough. But you can lean over. You can look over. You can throw up over. it's not a ride. You just walk around at your leisure, and you pay $175, and you get 15 or 30 minutes to walk around. Now, the whole experience takes 90 minutes because they spend an hour going over the rules and, you know, the safety, and they double check your harnesses and they make sure you're safe. And you go out there and they hook you to this rod so you don't fall off, and you can walk all the way around this and lean over the edge and get your picture taken, and they do a video of you out there. It looks terrifying. It just looks terrifying.
Well, I wanted to tell you that I did so much less prep or less learning and less harness checks and less carabiner checks when I was leaping over ravines and where you would fall to your death immediately doing this in Hawaii. So I think that the limiting factor for me on this video would be that it does cost $175 and you only get 30 minutes. I think I would totally do it, and I think that my husband would find it boring.
Oh, really?
He did the zip lining thing, and he was like, I'm glad you had a good time. That was, like, whatever. I forget that he's upside down flying jets at, you know, the speed of light in outer space. So
getting shot at and shooting at things, you know.
Exactly, dropping bombs. Yeah, he does stuff that we can't. I don't think that even me talking to him after work every day can even fathom what he does on a daily basis or what any of our American, you know, fighter pilots do on a daily basis. So he would find this boring. I would find it really exciting but too expensive, and there's no way you would do it at all, ever?
No, I would probably try it. I'm not sure I would lean over the edge like a couple of them did in the video, but I would probably try it. That height stuff doesn't bother me as much, you know, like in Vegas there, I'll go out to the edge and lean over and all that. But Jennifer definitely got sweaty palms just even thinking about it. If you have any fear of heights at all, you're never going to do this one.
I don't think that I would do it, but simply because it's too expensive and there's too much, like, red tape.
keep talking there. I have to turn the weather alarm off. We're getting a thunderstorm warning. Hold on.
Uh-oh. Jennifer says she'll get it. Well,
there he goes. Well, see, the hard part is there are two weather radios in our house, Glenn being the weather weenie he is. There's one in his office, and there's one at the opposite end of the house. So he's getting the one in his office because it's three steps away. And by the way, there is not a snowball's chance in Hades that I would even walk out the door.
Are you serious? You would probably not even want to go to the top. Like, when you have you been to Seattle and to the top of the Space Needle or the top of the Empire State Building in New York?
I went to the top of the one in Vegas.
Okay.
And that was an adventure in and of itself.
I really don't have any
desire to go to the tops of any of those buildings, really.
We got to tell the story. So we're going to the stratosphere. Poor Jennifer, who I had to talk into this in the first place, and that's like 110 stories up. We go in the elevator, and I don't know if you...
I'm going to go turn off a radio somewhere now.
Okay. You've been in this, right, right, Jamie? You've been up this one, the stratosphere in Vegas?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I don't know why, but we have been to the top of almost every building we go to in any city. For some reason, Chad and I just love to do that. In Vegas, in Paris, we went to the top of the Eiffel Tower. We went to the top of the one big cathedral thing in Florence. We went to the top of stuff in Rome. We just everywhere we've gone, for some reason, we always try to get to the top of the tallest building. So not scary for me. I am dying to know what Jennifer did, because Jennifer, Jen, seems quite perfect. So to find out that she has a chink in her armor is exciting to me.
Well, she has a couple chinks. The other one is she's claustrophobic and doesn't like elevators all that much to begin with. So and she doesn't like heights. So I talk her into going to the top of the stratosphere, where you have to be in an elevator for like a minute going up. So we get in the elevator, and, you know, those are manned elevators. There's somebody in there with you, and they take you up the 110 stories, which really does take some time. Well, we get about 90 stories up, and the alarms go off. The elevator stops. And the little lady in there says, ooh, that's the fire alarm. The elevator is about to descend. You want to hold on a little. So immediately the elevator starts dropping rapidly to the basement. So what took us probably about 45 seconds going up, I think took us 15 seconds going down.
Okay, that was good.
And, so they get to the basement. The doors open. There's all these people flooding out of elevators, and there's all these workers that are just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And they tell us, okay, you're just going to gather in this area over here in the basement. Do not move. Stay here. This is not a drill. So apparently they had been showing there was a fire all the way at the top. Well, those poor people at the top, if it had turned out to have been a fire, they would have had to walk down the 110 story.
And the thing is, you wouldn't walk down, you would run down, because you think there's a fire. So you would run, and it would be mass chaos, and people would be pushing people over, and you'd be exhausted. So there was no fire. You guys were dropped to the basement.
No, and they kept us down there for 45 minutes until they were sure there wasn't. So we were in this basement area with all these other people going, what the hell's going on? And then they were like, okay, it's okay. And then I had to talk Jennifer into going into it again to go back. And after that, it was a little tougher conversation. But she did it. I was very proud of her. She did do it.
Okay.
I think she's left
gets
the building,
to the top.
Actually. She doesn't even. And she will not go, like, over to the glass and lean out and all that. And that one, actually, you can go outside where the rides are. But she wouldn't do that. But she did go up to the top. I got to give her credit for even getting back in the elevator after that experience. So I give her props for that.
That's impressive. All
right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's get off of heights and onto horses.
Oh, okay.
You know how we talked about whether or not you would go into, by the way, Jamie, if we get cut off here, we are about to get a really nasty thunderstorm.
Okay.
You're on your own. Just thought I'd let you know.
Okay, I'll take care of it.
Yeah, okay, good. So you know how we talked about when Boyd's fire was, whether you would have the guts to run into a burning building to save your horses? Remember we had that discussion?
Yeah.
Well, a 14-year-old girl in Massachusetts yesterday had the opportunity to find out. Her horse, she was transporting her horse, Hershey, that's the horse's name, and this girl's name, Grace Pilkington. Pilkington, something like that.
Pilkington
was transporting her horse. They were driving down the highway, and all of a sudden, her mom looked out the back, and this girl's 14, and noticed that there was smoke coming from the front of the trailer. And so she pulled over into the breakdown lane quickly, and they ran to the back and discovered that the trailer was on fire. So apparently mom went to get the gate, to put the gate down, and didn't know that her 14-year-old daughter had gone to the front, jumped into the front where the flames were, so that when her mother got the gate down, she could lead her horse out, which she did successfully. By the time she got the horse out of the trailer, the flames were shooting 8 feet in the air. And this trailer, I saw pictures of it, it completely burned out. You know that Hulk with just the frame we had last week's really bad ads? That's what it looked like. There was just a frame. There was nothing left of this trailer. So she actually ran into the part where the fire was, and by the time they got the horse backed out, the flames were 8 feet in the air. Everybody was okay. Horse was okay. The daughter was okay. But that just, you know, again, the question, would you do it? Well, apparently this 14-year-old didn't think twice and did it to get her horse Hershey out of there.
We've got to get her on the air. I want to have her on the show and just give her a big high five because, again, this is a child who dove into a burning trailer, a horse trailer that was on fire, leapt in there, had the peace of mind, the presence of mind to unhook her horse and calmly lead him backwards while her mother was opening the back of the trailer. It's a phenomenal movement, I think, to be able to calmly jump in there and get it. And I would think that 99% of listeners would do the same thing. I'm not sure because hopefully, God forbid, we're ever in that situation. But, you know, that's your family in there. I mean, it's like your baby. And that's what they've said now in the comments. They're saying that his mom's like, yeah, he's my new son. He's part of the family now. they rescued it. I also love the fact that the fire rescue crews stopped traffic along the highway so that Hershey could graze in the median. I was like,
yeah, and what they did, too, one of the firemen apparently was into horses and one of the volunteer firemen brought his trailer out and took him back to their farm until they could get transportation and kept him at their farm. So good kudos to the fire department up there in New England as well for doing that. And apparently the daughter has a new nickname now, and everybody is calling her Boyd Martin. That's her new nickname. So they must be inventors and knew the Boyd story. And there is a happy ending to a story, except for the trailer. And apparently the reason it caught fire is they had a water cooler in there, and they think that's what caught fire. It actually ruptured, you know, something to keep the water cool, probably hooked to the battery or something. So that's what caught fire.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing story, and we definitely we need to find her because that's just, she's just a hero to me, you know, to be able to do that. So there you go. Good for her. And we'll try to follow up with her as well. Now, I want to tell you another good story before we get into the bad stories is just so I can keep you guys up to date. And I know that you love to be up to date on all things horse racing, Glenn. Uncle Mo is still doing works. He worked at 5 furlongs in 1:02, and that is actually a pretty good time. So they are actually on schedule to start him in a Grade 1 stakes race on August 27th. So Uncle Mo about to be back on the track.
Cool. Well, that's terrific. Uncle Mo is on the way again.
Now, if you guys don't remember, let me refresh your memory. Uncle Mo was the Horse of the Year last year, the two-year-old Horse of the Year, and was slated since, like, last October to be the Derby favorite. But he was pulled out of the Kentucky Derby because he had some strange gastrointestinal illness that they have nursed him back through. He is on his way. This is going to be, like, the comeback story of the year. And not only do they go ahead and they enter him in another race, they enter him in, like, a huge $250,000 stakes race. So they're not starting back small, okay? Todd Pletcher has jumped in head first, which is something that he would do. So good luck to Uncle Mo, and we'll keep you posted on that. We got about 25 days to wait.
All right, we're going to be back with our guest right after this break here. His name is Jimmy Tactor. He is the trainer of See You at Peeler's, and that is the horse that is now 21 for 21, a filly, a harness horse. And I'll tell you what, this guy is he's been nominated to the Harness Racing Hall of Fame, and he is well-known in the racing world, in the harness racing world. So we're thrilled to have him on the show and also thrilled to talk about the Zenyatta of the harness world. See you at Peeler's right after this word from Back on Track.
Back on Track is a revolutionary line of pain relief products for horses and humans. Utilizing ancient Chinese experience, modern scientific findings, and skilled textile production, we have developed a line of products made of polyester fabric with ceramic powder melted into the threads. This ceramic-infused fabric reflects body heat as infrared waves, a form of energy that has a documented pain-relieving effect. It can reduce inflammation, ease muscle tension, increase blood circulation, and boost the healing process. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your muscles before exercise or work, thereby reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, they can also expedite the recovery from established injuries. Our wide range of products for horses includes blankets, coolers, saddle pads, boots, and wraps. We also offer a number of products for humans, including back and knee braces, gloves, bedding, and clothing. Back on Track is used by the top equestrians in the world, including McLean Ward, Stefan Peters, BZ Madden, Michelle Gibson, Margie Engel, and Debbie McDonald, just to name a few.
We've been using the Back on Track products now for approximately 4 years, starting with the leg wraps and the blankets. We've seen and noticed wonderful results from these products. We've no longer used poultice in our barn. The horses come out with much tighter legs, seem to have many less ailments, and the side effects of using poultice are not noticed, obviously, using the Back on Track wraps. Using the blanket, the horses have far less back trouble, far less irritation, allows us to do less veterinary treatments on the horse's joints, as well as chiropractic work, and we really feel that it's been a huge improvement for us and helped us have some great results.
If you and your horse would like to experience better health and quality of life, Back on Track may be the answer that you've been looking for.
Well, that's Back on Track products. You can find them at backontrackproducts.com. And actually, our next guest knows Bo from Back on Track products, and I think grew up in the same town. And our guest, as I mentioned, is Jimmy Tactor. He is the trainer of See You at Peeler's, and he is really kind of an all-star trainer over there in the harness racing world. Good morning, Jimmy.
Yeah, good morning.
It's good to have you on, and I was surprised. It was kind of neat that we had you on the same time we're running Bo's ads for Back on Track.
Yeah, isn't that something? Small word, huh?
Yeah, it is. Well, now tell me, See You at Peeler's. The first question I have is, had training this horse from the beginning?
Yes, I'm actually, my wife and I actually own the mare. We bred her, you know, so we are also the breeder on her.
Okay, so you've owned and bred her as well. Now, how did you get the name See You at Peeler's?
Well, you know, it's kind of a little funny story because, you know, the guy that owned the mare that I purchased from, he's, I don't want to sound a little wrong here, but he liked a lot to go to those... gentleman's bar. And he talked so much about that, and you know, so we, and he said, you know, I gotta go to the peeler. She said, you know, he's just talking a little funny. So that's how we end up with that name. You know, my wife thought it was funny.
At that time, you didn't know that this was going to become one of the most famous harness horses in history.
No. And, you know, I had to explain that so many times now, and it started to be funnier and funnier, you know, because it's you don't know what to say all the ways, but, you know.
Yeah.
You
should have made something up a long time ago. See you at the strip club.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, at what point, now this horse is 21 for 21 now, right?
Yeah.
At what point did you start to realize that you had a winner on your hand, a real winner?
Well, you never really know. I mean, you know, it's when you're training them down, she was kind of plain. You know, she did her work and then didn't really show, you know, like she was an outstanding horse. And we brought her up to Meadlands and did her first, qualifier up there, what we call a baby race. And she came home 26-1 and just blew by the horses like they were standing still. And, it took a long time for me to realize that, well, maybe this filly is not just a little New York's Irish Stakes horse. She's maybe, a step above an average horse here.
And now, so she's 21 for 21. Do you race them the same time apart that the flat racers do? In other words, do they get 3 or 4 weeks between races? Are they run more often?
Well, standardbred are much more durable horses than the thoroughbred are. They can race much more tighter between the races. I mean, there's a lot of them racing every week or. Preferable you try to stay every 2 weeks, but you know they're very durable horses. Like Peeler, when she raced in early this year, she raced actually 5 weeks in a row, and it's a very tough program. I mean, you know, they're talking about in the thoroughbred, like the Triple Crown, there the horses, they have 2 weeks and 3 weeks even between Preakness and the Belmont Stakes, and they're talking about how tough program that is, and that's just three races. And it's a tough program, but these horses are much more durable than the thoroughbred are, and they can handle the stress and the races a lot better.
Now she is a pacer, and then 21 races. How many of those have been against the guys? Because I know she's slated potentially to go on September 22nd to the Little Brown Jug in Delaware, which is actually a pretty interesting kind of different kind of race, and she's going to run against a bunch of colts there. Will this be her first time up against colts?
No, she raced in the race in Yonkers race where they called Art Rooney's against the boys, and she won that race, and that's the first time she she had race that she could race against the boys. So I could have supplemented her to the Meadlands pace. But I didn't feel like it was $100,000 supplemental, and she had races at the same time, so I didn't see the reason why she should go against the boys there, you know. But Little Brown Jug is on the schedule. We don't know. I mean, it's still some way ahead of us, and we got to see how she's how she coming up to that point.
That's a huge. And explain to everybody a little bit about that race for those listeners that don't know what the Little Brown Jug is.
Well, Little Brown Jug is one of the older races they have. It's up in Columbus, Ohio. It's actually a little town above Columbus called Delaware, and they have that meet out there called the Little Brown Jug in September. And the race is you have to win two heats the same day, so it's possible that the horse actually could go three times in the same day.
To show you that he's absolutely right. These horses are way tougher than thoroughbreds, but I guess it may be, is it less stressful being a pacer, like on their joints and on their bones, as it is to gallop or to trot, or is it pretty much the same.
Well, I mean, you know, pacers, first of all, they go a lot faster than the trotters do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the same token, the landing on, you know, right front and right hind at the same time. And so they have a little bit less, you know, weight carrying on each leg versus a trotter that landing, you know, like we humans are trotters and they're landing a little bit different, you know, on the leg. So it's much harder for a trotter. But at the same token, they don't go as fast. So the pacers today, they go so fast. So it's they're going, you know, like PLS and things like that. You can, if you really send her away, she can go a quarter maybe in 25 and 2, 25 and 3. And we started talking about that's almost thoroughbred speed.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. That's absolutely fast. So she, you have done pretty much everything in the standardbred world. It looks like you've been, you're a trainer, you've been a driver, your family, you started out probably, you know, being a hot walker because your dad was also a trainer, and your whole entire family is involved in this with you. How important is that to have your family around you, or do they kind of drive you crazy sometimes?
Well, well, everybody to have the family involved in the in their business, it's ups and downs. But if you add it up, I mean, you know, it's of course it's a big plus. I mean, you know, you have your support through your family and all playing with your team 100%. You know, you can trust your family 100% and things like that. You know, so you know, I mean, it in most part have been good. And of course, you know, I got a couple of daughters working for me, and you know how girls are. They can have the fights, but overall, I would say it's a thing. And at me and this point, you know, it's that's kind of motivate you, you know, to you know, be in the game. You know, I mean, you know, see them develop and maybe one day they take over.
And which is kind of what you did. I know your dad, you guys are from Sweden, and your dad said, oh, go to America for a little bit, you know, learn a little bit, and then come back and take over my business. But you said, yeah, I'm going to stay in America, and I'm going to be the trainer of what they now call, they're calling the pacing Zenyatta. How exciting is that to have that comparison?
Well, it's very. I mean, I came over here 29 years ago, and in Sweden they don't have pacers. So, actually, whole Europe don't have pacers except England and Ireland. But harness racing very small in those countries, but the rest of Europe is all trotters. So, it's a big change. You know, I mean, you started, you know, training, pacers. I started at about. You know, doing that series about 6-7 years ago, and we've been extremely successful. We've done very well with them, and right now my operation is 50-50 pacers and trotters. So it's exciting. It's a little different, you know. I mean, you know, and Europe don't follow it too much, but of course, a horse like Seat Peelers, you know, that have this winning streak and been competing against the best horses and. And in that level, the winning 21 straight win is almost impossible to do in today's races.
Yeah, again, 21 for 21. She's won $1.2 million. How long and how far do you think she's going to go?
Well, you know, I mean, it depends how tough I want to, you know, race her against. If I can pick simpler stakes and things like that, you know, and her winning streak, of course, have a greater chance to stay longer. But you know, I mean, you know, she's such a great horse. I mean, you know, but it's like you're dealing with flesh and blood. I mean, you know, they carry viruses and they get sick and things like that. And even, you know, races we have a sulky behind the horses, they can interfere with each other. I mean, things like that. A lot of things can happen in races, and that's why I say that's so tough to win 21 races without having, first of all, somebody bump into you and things like that. You know, I mean, that's. But you know, she's, long as she's in good health and everything like that, I think she's tough to get beat right now. I mean, the last start, she was probably as best as she ever was. She had a little bit fallback to start before that. She came up with a sickness. She had a little problem with the hydration. And, you know, it's been extremely hot here in New Jersey. So So I thought for a while in the stretch that she's going to get beat, but somehow she dug in deep and ended up winning with a length anyway.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
I know that you're limited on time, and we have to let you go. But I just wanted to thank you for. We're gonna follow. See you at Peeler's for sure. And we have a lot of listeners that actually do have their own horses and do harness racing. So they listen in the barns every morning. So we appreciate Dawn Deans for helping us to find you and get you on the air. And we would love to have you back again sometime.
Anytime.
All right, sounds great. And you know what? Just one last comment. I'm a driver, and the fastest thing I've ever driven is a Hackney. I can't imagine the speed of being behind CEO at Peeler's and how much fun that must be.
Yeah, well, you know, that's you're sitting behind an animal that's traveling in a gate of 35 miles per hour. It's a real thrill, you know. I mean, excitement is unbelievable when you see a whole body mowing in high speed. These horses are today better than ever. I mean, they are extremely, extremely fast horses and extremely tough horses, too.
Well, thank you so much, Jimmy. Go train some horses. We appreciate you being on with us today.
No, you're welcome. Thank you.
All right,
give Peeler's a carrot from us. I wonder if she gets carrots. Like, Zenyatta got beer, and Zenyatta got aloe vera juice and Guinness and all this stuff. I wonder if she at Peeler's gets anything special. Too bad. We'll have to get him back on again and talk about
I kind of think it's probably something stronger, seeing she was named after a strip club.
that's so funny. I cannot believe that. I think I remember reading that somewhere forever ago,
I
but
think
totally
I did
forgot.
Too.
Yeah.
Once he said it, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
How cool. Hey, we're going to do something. We're going to change the schedule here a little bit. We're in the middle of a wicked thunderstorm here, and we've something we have to take care of here quick. So we're going to play the song, Jamie, and then we will be back with Black Beauty. We're going to be back with the horse health report this week, talking about equine infectious anemia right after this song called Ride My Pony. And this is from Mary Ann Kennedy.
Don't even want to take the time to say goodbye. Just want to ride my pony underneath the clear blue sky. That's the only kind of love I seem to understand. Just the two of us. The rain's burning in my hand. I see the light. I see the truth in his eyes, and I know.
amazing. You play Ride My Pony by Marianne Kennedy, which is a great song, but did you not have a song about driving or standardbreds or pacing or winning horse races or something like that? Marianne Kennedy could have had a, I want to drive my pony. Something.
We need to put that out there. We need to find a song for drivers.
I know. We need a driving song or a standardbred racing. We need a See You at Peeler song. Hey, girls. Hey, guys.
Can you imagine See You at Peeler song knowing how the horse was, why the horse was named that?
I could come up with some lyrics.
Burlesque.
Can I do the lyrics, fun. Please? Can I please write the lyrics?
Please take it away.
Hey, we just had to do something here. Actually, I should do this. Sort of fits anyway. As we mentioned, we're in the middle of a wicked thunderstorm here, and alarms are going off everywhere. But Glory is, you know, we've talked about before, our new greyhound. She does not like loud noises and especially doesn't like thunderstorms. So we bought her one of those thunder shirts that we talked about on the show. Remember, Jamie?
Uh-huh.
We talked about the thunder shirt. Well, so we're testing it now. We had to put it on her in the break because she was kind of getting very upset because it's very loud here. So that's why we did the song early, and we had to do a Glory update here. So we're in the testing phase with the thunder shirt. I'm not sure it's helping a whole lot. We're going to have to give it more testing.
Okay, time out. So you played the song, and you changed the entire schedule of our show to go put a shirt on your dog?
This is let me just clarify that. This is the owner of the Horse Radio Network's dog. Just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I was just thinking, I'm like, when have I messed up the whole show? Oh, the twice now that my horses have gotten out and I have to run and put them away.
That's right.
In the middle of the show. So I'm guilty too, and I don't own the network, so I'm just lucky to not be fired, really. But so, question. What exactly does Glory do when she's nervous during the thunderstorms? Followed by the second question is, what is she doing now that she's wearing her shirt?
Well, you know, she walks around and whines and just looks absolutely terrified, tries to hide under things, and you know how dogs are when they're terrified. Well, now she is just laying beside me with the thunder shirt on, just looking concerned, not terrified. So it might help a little bit. No, she's not shaking. So
well,
it might actually help a little bit. You failed
to tell the listening audience and Jamie that when the thunderstorms get really loud, and we have good ones here in Lexington, Kentucky, she will go into the closet. We have a relatively small walk-in closet in our bedroom, and she will literally burrow into the closet because we keep the luggage in the back there, so there's suitcases all stacked up. She will burrow under the suitcases.
Yes.
Okay.
It's rather pitiful.
So it sounds like she's actually doing better with the thunder shirt on if she's just laying next to you looking concerned as opposed to burrowing or whining or pacing.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
So I think it's probably about 80% effective with her so far. And we've only tried it a couple times now since we got it. So, you know, I wish the real test will be next year at 4th of July, which was just absolutely something else this year for three or four nights in a row. They actually are talking about changing the law here because they allowed all kinds of fireworks, the shooting air fireworks, everything was allowed this year. And there were just days of it. So now they're talking about regulating what nights you're allowed to use them. Thank God, because it just went on forever, every night. So hopefully that'll be fixed.
Good luck enforcing
anyway,
that one in neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly.
Never gonna work.
So it's time for Black Beauty. Are you ready? Do you have the book open to the correct chapter?
Yes, because if you recall, it is today part two of Jerry Barker, and they were driving through the streets of London describing how it was, and the last line was, but I must go back to my story.
I got to tell you, I'm really mad at your husband, Chad, because I called him up and I said, could you please make sure she loses the book on the way up there to vacation, or that it just accidentally gets taken back out of the luggage? And apparently he failed on his duty as a horse husband.
Glenn, when you've got Black Beauty tucked into your bra strap, you're never going to get rid of it.
Thank you. This is a dramatic reading by Jamie Jennings of the English classic Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Chapter 35, Jerry Barker, Part 2. The streets were very full that day, but we got on pretty well at the bottom of Cheapside, where there was a block for about 3 or 4 minutes. The young man put his head out and said anxiously, "I think I'd better get out and walk. I shall never get there if this goes on." "I'll do all that can be done, sir," said Jerry. "I think we should be in time. This walk-up cannot last much longer, and your luggage is very heavy for you to carry, sir." Just then the cart in front of us began to move on, and then we had a good turn. In and out we went as fast as horse flesh could do it, and for a wonder we had a good clear time on the London Bridge. For us there was a whole train of cabs and carriages all going our way at quick trot, perhaps wanting to catch that very train. At any rate, we whirled into the station with many more just as the great clock pointed to 8 minutes to 12 o'clock. "Thank God we're in time," said the young man, "and thank you too, my friend, and your good horse. You have saved me more money than can ever pay for. Take this extra half crown." "No, sir, no thank you all the same. I'm glad we hit the time, sir. But don't stay now, sir. The bell is ringing. Here, porter, take this gentleman's luggage. Dover Line, 12 o'clock train, that's it," and said without waiting for another word. Jerry wheeled me around to make room for other cabs who were dashing up at the last minute and drew up on the side till the crush was past. "So glad," he said, "so glad. Poor young fellow. I wonder what it was that made him so anxious." Jerry often talked to himself quite loud enough for me to hear when we were not moving. On Jerry's return to the rank, there was a good deal of laughing and chafing in him for driving hard to the train for an extra fare, as they said, all against his principles, and they wanted to know how much he had pocketed. "A good deal more than I generally get," said he, nodding slyly. "What he gave me will keep me in little comforts for several days." "Gammon," said one. "He's a humbug," said one, "preaching to us and then doing the same himself." "Look here, mate," said Jerry. "The gentleman offered me a half crown extra, and I didn't take it. It was quite pay enough for me to see how glad he was to catch that train. And if Jack and I choose to have a quick run now and then to please ourselves, well, that's our business and not yours." "Well," said Larry, "you'll never be a rich man." "Most likely not," said Jerry, "but I don't know that I shall be less happy for that. I have heard the commandments read a great many times, and I never noticed that any of them said, 'Thou shalt be rich.' And then there are a good many curious things said in the New Testament about rich men that I think would make me feel rather queer if I was one of them." "And if you ever do get rich," said Governor Gray, looking over his shoulder at the top of his cab, "you'll deserve it, Jerry. You won't find a curse come with your wealth. As for you, Larry, you'll die poor. You'll spend too much in the whipcord." "Well," said Larry, "what is a fellow to do if this horse won't go without it?" "You never take the trouble to see if he'll go without it. Your whip is always going to be as if you had the St. Vitus dance in your arm, and it does not wear you out. It wears your horse out, and you know you're always changing your horses. And why? Because you never give him any peace or encouragement." "Well, I have not had good luck," said Larry. "That's where it is." "And you never will," said the governor. Good luck is rather particular with who she rides with, and mostly prefers those who have good common sense and a good heart. At least that is my experience." Governor Gray turned around again to his newspaper, and the other men went to their cabs. Tomorrow, Chapter 36, The Sunday Cab.
Bye. Thank you.
I'll have you know, you will be very happy to know, that all the years I've spent driving, I never learned to carry the whip in my hand. It always stayed in the doohickey, and I never used it unless I had to back up, and my pony would not back up unless you just touched her on the butt with the whip. You just tapped her on the butt with the whip, and that's how she backed up. So you'll be happy to know that I was not that way.
She couldn't back up because you had her bearing rein so tight, then you had to whip her for it.
This half hour is sponsored by FeedXL. You know, if you want to find out if you're feeding your horse correctly, if you want to know that your horse is eating all the proper stuff, including vitamins and minerals and supplements, the place to do that is FeedXL. Or if you just want to learn more about horse nutrition, FeedXL.com is the place to go. They're having a sale this month, actually. Right now, it's 20% off for the month of August on all of their plans. So if you want to go in there and find out if you're feeding your horses correctly or what you need to change, then this is the month to do it. August is the time because it is 20% off. So stop over to FeedXL.com today. Why wait? Just do it today. Heck, it's raining, it's too hot, whatever it is. You're not outside in the afternoon anyway. You might as well take some time to do right by your horses at FeedXL.com. Well, it looks like we do have our guests ready, Jamie. So why don't we go ahead and take it away with the Horse Health Report.
All right. Well, we are going to talk today. Obviously, every week we talk to thehorse.com, which is kind of the go-to source for anything health-related about your horse. They can scare you to death, but also they can educate you and then make you feel a lot better because sometimes there's things you can do, and obviously learning is the key. So today we're going to talk about EIA, equine infectious anemia, and we're going to talk to Dr. Issel and Christy about that because, again, Glenn this morning said, I don't know anything about EIA. I don't know anything about it. But then I reminded him that, yes, he does actually because he's gotten Coggins tests for his horses before. Oh, that's what that's for? So let's first of all welcome Dr. Issel and Christy. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, Dr. Issel, nice voice. Sounds great. Good morning.
Oh, geez.
Chuck, I think
now
you have a stalker in the
topic.
Making.
Oh, you guys, well, Christy, talk to us a little bit about it, and why don't you just take it away and educate the masses, if you will.
We'll do.
Yeah, because I really thought the Coggins, Christy, I really thought the Coggins test was for a disease called Coggins. So
I think you're not alone in that. And I do seem to remember last time we mentioned EIA on the show, we asked you, we did a little stump the host, and we asked you what a Coggins was, and all you could tell us is that it was a piece of paper that you had to take to the horse show, or your wife gets really, really mad at you when you leave it at home.
That's right. Yep. That's all true.
So we've got Chuck Issel on the line with us today. He is, if there is a god of EIA research, it is Chuck Issel, and I'm really glad that he was able to join us on the show today. He's been researching EIA for about 37 years now, so he knows more about it than just about anybody on the planet. And Chuck, can you start out by telling us just a little bit about what EIA is, especially for Glenn?
Sure. Most people know it because of Coggins testing requirements nationally and internationally, as well as locally for shows and congregations and things. And the disease is commonly known as Coggins because Dr. Leroy Coggins, who was at Cornell University in the late 1960s, early 1970s, developed the first accurate diagnostic test for equine infectious anemia, which means that we could collect blood samples from horses and find antibodies against the virus, and that would be indicating that the virus actually is present in those animals because EIA virus is a lentivirus, a relative of HIV, and it causes persistent infections in the host. And initially, the disease losses from equine infectious anemia were, we thought, quite high, because we had no way to diagnose it. And once we did have a diagnostic test, then we could find all the animals infected with the virus, not just those showing clinical signs. And so in the 1970s and before, clinical EIA was common throughout the world, especially in areas, tropical areas, where the vectors of the virus persisted for longer periods of time, so that they could transfer the virus mechanically between horses, and also in areas where people indiscriminately used needles and syringes when they became more available, so that they aided in transmission of the virus. So since that time, we've had an accurate diagnostic test, and we now know that the majority of horses infected with the virus are not clinically ill, at least when the sample is collected. And so inapparent carriers really predominate in this infection, quite in contrast to the HIV people who are not treated for the infection that almost always progress to a very severe clinical disease.
Well, question about that real quick, Christy and Dr. Issel, is that if the horses have no clinical signs, could it be that the tests are
false, or do you would you do like several tests?
No, a single viewing of a horse is not very informative, because when you become infected with this persistent virus infection, the virus level can change very dramatically from day to day, from week to week. And you may go 10 years before you break with a clinical episode. We followed some research bands where quarantined horses were kept, where we've been able to get samples over them repeatedly and show no virus that we can detect in circulation in low volumes, at least, for extended periods of time. And then subsequently, they developed very severe chronic equine infectious anemia, which was the predominant form of the disease, at some later time, and maybe 10 years later. So the predictive value is not very high as to whether the inapparent carrier will become a clinical case, but the potential is always there. And so that's what we have reacted to in veterinary medicine. We've protected the horse population because of the potential of this virus to replicate to very high levels and cause very serious disease.
Now, we talked a little bit about the disease and how it's transmitted, but can you tell us what signs you would see if your horse did have EIA, if he was a clinical case?
In general, at least in the laboratory studies where we work with virus strains that are quite defined, we see increases in body temperature, fever. We see slight decreases in the numbers of platelets in the circulation, and when those precipitously drop associated with a fever episode, there can be small hemorrhages located in the mucous membranes under the tongue, for example, and the mouth might be the best place to see those. But in many cases, that's all that is seen externally, especially with the first episode of illness in the horse. And that may be very short-lived. And if that happens in a pasture situation, the veterinarian or the horse owner probably would not notice it. The horse may go off feed for a couple of hours, but may be absolutely normal in its activities. And so without a monitoring of body temperature, it's really not very informative. But once the horse does become an inapparent carrier, if he subsequently is stressed, there's a chance that could result in a recrudescence of the disease manifestation. And so, for example, when a mare gives birth, that may be enough of a stressor to increase virus replication for a short amount of time and increase the clinical signs. And in the chronic form of the disease, the more common signs observed are depression, weakness, tremendous loss in weight and condition, dependent edema, swelling of legs and brisket area especially, and a lot of those things that are more common in the disease, but we rarely see that today.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. And why is this disease considered such a big deal? Why do we have to test horses for it every year? And we'll get some changes in testing protocols in a minute.
Yeah,
that is
our
a good question, because is there any other disease really that we have to have, you know, paperwork to show up at a show as common as Coggins test? There really isn't, is there?
No. In some areas, vaccination for encephalitis, for example, is required, but not in all areas. Equine infectious anemia certainly is the most common requirement.
Okay. And why is that disease become, or why is documentation of your horse being tested for that disease become such a big deal? I mean, there were some pretty big outbreaks early on, right? Caused a lot more disease.
Yes, and there's still outbreaks around the world. You may recall the outbreak in 2006 in Ireland and Italy that were reported very widely, and there's still outbreaks in many countries throughout the world. It's not really our only monitor for the infection is to look for carriers of the virus and control their movement. And that's quite in contrast to influenza or herpes virus, which may be somewhat controlled or all controlled by immunizations, but which are spread by contact. Equine infectious anemia, on the other hand, is transferred via blood. And actually, the risk of acquiring equine infectious anemia is much lower than acquiring herpes or influenza virus. But since it is a persistent, lifelong infection, we have this tool, and we've used it very effectively over years to reduce the number of cases in this country from 10,000 a year in 1976 to less than 100 for the last 2 years combined in the United States.
It's a huge success story, and it's in the use of that tool and some other tests that have come along kind of led you to recommend testing a little bit less with a little bit different strategy than the you know, every horse every year whenever you're going across state lines, whatnot. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and it's mostly based on the risk of acquiring the infection. And people that move their horses repeatedly from one show to another come in contact with horses that have never been tested. And that's really where the risk of infection is in this country today. If you were to quarantine your horse on a farm 200 yards from EIA-positive horses who were controlled in their movement so they came no closer than 200 yards, the risk of your horse acquiring the infection is probably 100,000 times less than the horse in the United States today, where we only have 1 in 10,000 horses infected. Of that horse freely moving to these congregation points and not knowing the status of the horses that they come in contact with. So I've been trying to educate people around the world about the value of the EIA-positive horse because it is reproductively valuable in many cases. We've monitored bands of foals that quite often can become raised free of the infection, and so I've lost my train, but I'll get back on as soon as you ask me another question.
Very good, no problem. So one of the things
I do
that, you were
that every
to...
day, every day.
So Chuck, one of the things that we had talked about was regionalization of risk, because it seems that there are just certain areas of the country that are at higher risk than others. Is that right?
Yeah, and for the last 10 years or so, we've been trying to get regulators in states and nationally to better design a better program, a more effective program, and using the investment that the horse industry makes in the testing. The horse industry pays about $50 million each year to test for equine infectious anemia in the United States, and we can do a better job with that investment. By making very subtle changes to the techniques of surveillance and also laboratory testing.
All right, so the changes in the regionalization mean what you're proposing is basically that instead of having to test your horse whenever you go across state lines, it may be certain states with similar levels of risk are grouped so that you only test when you're moving in and out of that region, not just in and out of your state. Is that right?
That is correct. And when we initially looked at that, the USDA did a survey and an estimate of savings of in the neighborhood of about $10 million a year just for regionalization alone.
Oh, that's huge. And just to be clear that we're not talking about just saving money. We're talking about focusing testing to try to get at the population of horses that never does get tested, not so much that
correct.
We're trying to just reduce testing across the board.
If you know you're putting your horse at risk by commingling with horses whose status you do not understand, you probably should increase the amount of testing you do. But if you're going to shows or you're only congregating with horses that have also been tested in the past, we think the risk of acquiring the infection from those is so low that less frequent testing could be done with the same effect. The state of New Jersey did that quite a few years ago to make every two-year test a requirement instead of an annual test, and they've seen no difference in control.
Oh, very good. And when you and I were discussing the show, we talked a little bit about different areas and how some of those regions where a bunch of horses are never tested. Do you have any estimate of how many horses out there are never tested? Because it sounds like there's some areas where there's some pretty significant percentages of the population that aren't.
Yeah, it would be nice if we actually had a census of the horse population so we know what the end that we're dealing with is. But since that is not known, any guess is merely that, just a wild guess. But overall, I would say that probably 60% of the horses nationally are not tested annually for sugar, and probably half of those have never been tested. And so the majority of new cases and new outbreaks found in this country each year in horses that have never been tested before. And so one of the requirements that is really a very good one is a test for change of ownership. And in Texas and Arkansas, a number of states have found that that is the most effective way to find the new cases, at least historically for the last 10 years or so.
Good to know. Definitely check those horses when you're buying them. Okay, so I want to make sure I know we're running.
I know we're running out of time, and I want to know just real quick, because this is obviously something that every horse owner has had to deal with, buying a horse, selling a horse, moving a horse, showing a horse. Is there at all the potential for a vaccine for EIA?
Certainly we're working toward that goal, at least using equine infectious anemia as a model for protection in the lentivirus system. So the funding that we have at this time is from the National Institutes of Health looking toward a vaccine model. And we know that horses infected with strains of virus are protected somewhat against challenge with other strains. And we're trying to define that at the very basic level to see if we can ever generate a protective vaccine. And there are a lot of different approaches to that, but we really don't understand the full spectrum of immune responses in the horses well enough to be able to say which ones we have to stimulate to get that level of protection that we see clinically. And so it's a real challenge. A lot of basic information is needed, and we're working toward that. In our studies, Dr. Horhoff in immunology is working toward those goals. Our collaborator at the University of Pittsburgh, Dr. Ron Montalero, has been leading these studies for over 25 years with us. And so we've had a very excellent collaboration looking at some of these aspects, from very basic details of the virus structure to levels of protection that we can see with our immunogen constructs. So yes, it's possible. It's unlikely that a practical vaccine will be widely available in the near future, certainly. Chinese scientists developed a vaccine that they used widely in the 1980s. I understand that it's no longer used. The model is still a very useful one, because there is a level of protection in the horse lentivirus system that is different from the other lentiviruses.
Well, and I would imagine, too, being so closely related to AIDS in the human and humans, that if the human vaccine or the horse vaccine was come up with, they could probably learn from each other. And so finding a horse vaccine would probably be fantastic for the human population as well. So it is definitely money well spent researching this, and definitely something that every horse owner has been concerned about. So, Christy, where can everybody find more if they want to learn more about this disease?
Well, absolutely. We have a category of information on EIA at thehorse.com. There's also a lot of information at the Gluck Center's website, and we'll share those links on the Facebook page here in just a few minutes, where you can keep up with the latest research. Also, there's the USDA recently put out a video, an updated video describing EIA and some of the updated recommendations for testing and control. And I know we're about out of time, but just briefly I wanted to touch on one thing. One of the important things that Dr. Issel was recommending, and I'll share this article link as well, was a change in testing as well, not from away from using the Coggins as the first-line test to using a different kind of test that's a little bit more sensitive. The difference between sensitive tests and specific tests is a more sensitive test will find more cases, but it may have a little bit higher rate of false positives. So the recommendation that he's been making is to use that more sensitive test as a first-line test so that you find more cases. And if your horse does test positive following up with the Coggins, which is a little bit more specific for EIA. Okay, it's not going to find quite as many cases, but it's going to be a lot more specific to EIA. So following that up is a double check, and then if there's any confusion, there's a third level of testing that can be done to determine if a horse really has EIA. But that strategy is being recommended now. It's not been legislated. It's not a legal requirement at this time. Just something that they're recommending to try and find more cases with a little bit smarter testing strategy. So, Dr. Issel, did I get all that right?
Yes. The U.S. Animal Health Association actually made a resolution in 2008 to adopt this three-tier system, as you're describing, because it does give us the best bang for the dollar. If we're doing sting of horses to find EIA, we should do the best possible job possible. And that may be redundant, but it needs redundancy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you guys are obviously doing a good job controlling this. So, you guys, thank you so much for being on here and educating. I'm sure we'd like to get you back on, too, to talk a little bit more about the three tiers of testing and the changes that you guys want to institute in the protocol of testing for this virus. So thank you, guys. Christy, as always, you're a wealth of information, and you bring us great information and great guests. Dr. Issel, thank you very much for being on the show and educating those of us who really don't know much at all about what you do. So I feel a lot better, and I feel a little bit more well-rounded. How about you, Glenn?
I'm just glad that EIA did not cause spewing pus and things like that, open wounds. That's what I'm glad about.
We'll try to gross you out more next week, I promise.
Okay, good. We forgot to play your bumper today, and we didn't need it anyway.
No, you didn't. Yeah. We'll try to rectify that next week.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You. Appreciate it. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, Dr. Issel. The only problem with that, Glenn, is it would scare me to absolute death to have a false positive. I mean, that is like, I remember when I was a kid, a horse came down with EIA in our barn. And for like 8 weeks, we were all under quarantine and they had to be tested every week. And that day that they were testing the horses and you had to wait on the results was the scariest day. And it happened 8 times in a row. It was very frightening because, my God, you're waiting to find out if your horse has to basically be put down. And the good news is not one other horse tested positive, but the bad news is one horse in our barn had it. And it was very sad
in
that situation. So, you know,
and as he said, there's not many of them. It's like 100 in the last 2 years, so there's not a lot of cases of it either.
Yeah, and we are spending an awful lot of money on testing for it, that's for sure. So, anyway, I'm glad smarter people than us are working on that.
Me too, but I do understand a little bit more about why we do Coggins tests now. Now it makes sense. Kind of makes sense.
Okay, good. I'm glad you learned something today.
I learned something today. I had never gotten the HIV correlation, which, you know, everybody can get that. You kind of understand that.
Yeah. It's horse AIDS, basically. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely good to know. I'm going to go get on a train now, Glenn. Did I tell you about that?
Yes, you're heading out to a train trip.
Yes, this is really exciting. I get to get in the truck and drive for an hour, and then I will get on a train where we will drive around for 4 to 5 hours, and then I will get back in the car and drive an hour back, all this with the entire family and 5 kids. Yay! So excited.
I'm so anxious to hear about that tomorrow. Thank you, everybody, for listening to today's show. We really appreciate you being here. We appreciate our guests stopping by. How much fun was that today? And also, yes, Dawn, you were a big help in getting that done. And I noticed she posted that she was listening this morning and really enjoyed the interview with Jimmy Hector. So, Dawn, thank you so much for that. We appreciate all of our listeners who help us find really cool guests. If you have a guest that you would like to hear on our show, just write to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We would love suggestions. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all of that stuff. You can just do all of that. I have a new closing today. You know how we try and find really cool closings? You got spay, neuter, and geld. I have a new one today. So,
gotta have a catchphrase.
So go ahead, do
gotta
yours.
Have a catchphrase.
Yeah. Go ahead and do yours first.
Okay. So goodbye, everybody. Have a great day. Please spay, neuter, and geld.
See you at Peelers, everybody. like it.